everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my friend Bob Dio. Bob is on the other side of the glass producing and engineering our program. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's the midweek edition already. November 28th, 2018. Hope the week has gone pretty well for you. It's always a difficult kind of recovering after 4-day holiday weekend to be back into the swing of things, but we're managing well here at KVOI, AM 1030, Tucson's Voice. And this is our new kind of logo, and I like it. Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk. And, of course, got all of our live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. We have all of our programs that we've done on Buckmaster since January of 2011 on my website, buckmastershow.com. The live line number, 790-2040. Well, the 2018 weather year is winding down, so how did we do? Zach Guido is with us. Zach is one of two dozen or so contributors that we're very honored to have on the Buckmaster Show. He is our contributor on climate. Zach is a program manager, the program manager and research scientist for the University of Arizona International Research and Applications Program and research affiliate at the Climate Assessment for the Southwest at the University of Arizona Institute of the Environment. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Always be good. Always good to be here to talk with you.
Well, it's always good to have you on the program. We have lots to cover. Yes, we're going to get to that much talked about climate assessment report that that President Trump has rejected, but a lot of scientists certainly would agree with the report. Maybe I'll just start off right off by asking, if you had to guess the percentage of people in your field that kind of believe that climate change is for real, what would you give me? What percentage?
The super majority. So 97, 98, 99%. I mean, there are very few scientists that argue with really the physics of global climate change and what's causing sort of what we're seeing in our atmosphere with mainly with increasing temperatures. I think there is a lot of scientific uncertainty with not so much the causes, but how the causes sort of manifest in what we see in the environment. And I think that's where most of the scientific debate is. But disregarding global climate change is a very, very minority view.
So that minority, a few outliers, but what would their argument be, the few that say that this is not for real? I guess starting maybe with the president, and he's not a scientist, but he would buy into those that say, you know, that they don't buy this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think the arguments are about, well, the climate is always changing. We mm-hmm. can't, there's natural climate variability. This is just a natural period. You can't, we don't have the monitoring networks around sufficiently robustly to know what the human contribution is. They sort of just disregard the fundamentals of the science. And I think for the most part, I mean, when you look at some of the psychology research, it largely doesn't have to do with the merits of science. It just has to do with other beliefs and other worldviews. And I think for, you know, when you look at the general public, I mean, there is the majority of public do support doing some sort of action mm-hmm. To mitigate greenhouse gases. I think the majority of the public is concerned. And I think there is a lot of people that are equally concerned about not wanting to disrupt their livelihoods. And I think, I think there's
economic ramifications.
Economic ramifications. Yeah. But I think there's opportunities to, and this is me, mm-hmm. my personal belief mm-hmm. is that there's opportunities to do both. I mean, mm-hmm. we don't necessarily have to see global climate change as a negative. It could be an opportunity for us to do the things that we know we're not doing quite as well a little bit better. And it could, when you look at, you know, globally and global populations and just how much of the global population is living in poverty, I mean, it is an opportunity to do development better and to rethink development. And so I wish the narrative was described more in that as opposed to more negatively. I think for the most part, the scientific consensus is overwhelmingly in support of human-caused climate change.
This national climate assessment, Zach, that's getting so much publicity, the report says that disasters like what we saw in California, which really was a horrible fire year, that these kinds of wildfire events, certainly here in the West, are going to be more, they're going to be worse, and they're going to be more frequent.
And the basis for that is what we know, what the scientific community knows very confidently, is that temperatures will continue to increase under current sort of greenhouse gas emissions. Like, we're going to have to decarbonize quite substantially for warming to change, and for it not to be warming, and that will take decades. And so this increasing temperature has a lot of effects. Like, it is a hydrologic variable, and that is, it dries the landscape out. Like, even if you just have natural variability in rain, when you have periodic dry periods, which people living here in the Southwest are quite familiar with,
right,
like occasionally or quite frequently, we get dry years. Mm-hmm. And when you have those dry years and you have 2 to 3 degrees warmer temperatures, the environment is just drier. And so everything dries out quicker, and you're kind of in a background state that may be more flammable for fires, for example. It also shifts the timing of snow melt.
Mm-hmm.
So it the
snow melt is earlier than in the year because
that's right,
things warm up faster.
And so that changes the way people mm-hmm. manage water. Mm-hmm. It also changes the snow line. So a couple degrees warmer in the winter means that you have rain at higher elevations than you otherwise would. And so, again, that changes the hydrologic cycle. So fires, potentially, there'll be perhaps more frequent fires. And when they do occur, there is just the background conditions maybe more ripe for more severe fires. But I think whenever you talk about impacts, you can't talk about them just through the lens of climate, because they're complicated, and the way people manage and the way people interact with
people living closer to areas that they never used to live before.
That's right.
In California.
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of hate to talk about the recent, campfire event, but it's so tragic, and you'd have to go back to like the late 1800s and that Chicago fire for there to be a more destructive fire in U.S. history. The campfire is perhaps a harbinger, but in the campfire's case, you had a lot of people moving into that urban wildland interface is what it's called. And so you had a growing population, you had background conditions, and there is potential for better sort of management, better preparation. You know, I believe that fire started in part because of a downed power line.
Yes, sir.
And, that was at a time when this part of the country typically gets these really strong, they're called El Diablo winds, or mm-hmm. people may know them better as sort of Santa Ana
right.
Winds. But they're sort of strong, dry winds that move east to west. And, there was some prediction, at least some of the things that I've read, about, intense winds, and under those conditions, maybe power grids need to shut off their power,
like an early warning system or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I guess my point is, climate is an amplifier, but so too is a bunch of other conditions that people have control over.
And we have talked about it with you before. Areas like the Pacific Northwest a year or so ago had record rainfall in the winter. But then again, they also in spring and summer had record warm temperatures drying out the forest.
Right. And that's interesting, too, because you get with the increased moisture and precipitation, you get growth, a lot of growth of this understory and these small mm-hmm. brushes. And that can also contribute. So a wet a wet winter or a wet year a couple years before, followed by, you know, dry times, is another sort of example of when conditions can be pretty ripe.
UA climate scientist Zach Guido will stick around. We'll have another segment with him, 790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation. But right now, the conversation turns to my favorite bakery. I love talking about Mona's because I love bakery goods, and Mona's is the home of the Danish Kringle. Here's a little jingle for you. Instead of cookies this Christmas, you can make Santa tingle. Leave him a treat from Mona's, the home of the Danish Kringle. There you go. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Zach, I know you love bakery goods. We've talked about this before.
Go to Mona's.
There you go. Go to Mona's. Owner Steve does such a great job with all those baked goods. They've got all the Christmas cookies ready for you, and they had a great Thanksgiving. I know we had our dinner rolls from Mona's, and as I've said now for the last couple of days, I could have made a meal on just the Mona's bread. But anyway, go to my website, buckmastershow.com, a link to Mona's, and also monasdanishbakery.com for a direct link to their website. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. We're speaking with Dr. Zach Guido. Zach is our Buckmaster Show contributor on climate, and he has outstanding credentials. He works at the University of Arizona. He's a climate scientist at the UA Institute of the Environment. That institute, Zach, as I recall, is kind of ahead of its time. A lot of universities are kind of jumping on board with all the thing about the environment, but this has been around for a few years.
Yeah, it's a great place. It brings together, I mean, there's so many amazing researchers at the U of A who in some part do work around the environment and people. And, you know, the Institute's it's a great mechanism for, you know, getting those people in the same room and fostering collaboration and just sort of highlighting all the cool, fascinating work that goes on a university. It's really a great asset. And, I feel pretty privileged to be part of it because there's some great collaborators and colleagues.
2018 will go into the record books as what kind of a year climate-wise for Tucson?
I'm going to say very interesting.
Okay.
I think it depends on the metrics that you look at. Let's just maybe go back to the monsoon. We had a relatively decent monsoon. I think if you look at the Tucson airport, something like 120% of average. So slightly above average. You know, there was pockets there of really vigorous activity. And, you know, we had presence of moisture always. So there was always some opportunity. I guess if I had to sum up the monsoon, which we talked about last mm-hmm. time, I would say it's slightly underperformed, but I'm not complaining.
And compared to the previous year, monsoon of 2017, which basically was like a two-week event, I like the fact that this was fairly decently spread out.
Right. And I think that's the main juxtaposition between 2 years ago and this year. It's mm-hmm. like 2 years ago, we just had just epic July precipitation. I think it was record book July mm-hmm. precip, but in that like 2 to 3 week period, and then there was nothing.
Nothing.
But it sure was good during those 2 to 3 weeks. And then this year, we didn't really have any breaks in the monsoon. We didn't have as many big events, but it was persistent. And I think it was highly spatially variable depending on where you were in the Tucson area, and then spread out over the Southwest.
And October was very interesting.
And then October was, in some respects, more interesting than the monsoon.
I think so.
I mean, we had here in, I believe, Arizona as a whole was something like the fourth wettest on record out mm-hmm. of like 120 years or something like
that. A lot of it driven by tropical moisture.
That's right. And that's the big story. There was a really active eastern tropical Pacific this year. In fact, when you sort of tally up all of the storms, and I think there were 22 named storms, like 12 hurricanes and 9 major hurricanes. And those are all above average.
Mm-hmm.
And when you tally all that up, and the sort of scientists who study this measure it in terms of this accumulated cyclonic energy. So it's looking at not just the intensity, but the duration and the frequency.
Mm-hmm.
It was record setting. And 3 of those storms ended up recurving. Usually they go east to west. Because they get entrained.
Right, and they curve back around from the mainland.
Right, and we had 3 that recurved back in, and we had remnants of those 3 that in some way influenced our rainfall here in the Southwest. The first one was that June 15th storm, which padded the monsoon statistics a little bit because mm-hmm. it sort of came in right within the window that
right.
the National Weather Service.
The first day of the window.
That's right. That was
June 15th, technically the beginning of the monsoon.
That's right. That was Bud. And then the other interesting thing is at the end of the monsoon on actually October 1st, so not really in the monsoon, but we had tropical storm, the remnant of Hurricane Rosa recurve in. And so that brought a lot of precipitation to a lot of Arizona. And then there was a week later, another event. It wasn't tropical storm related. It was just this cutoff low or closed low, rather. And then, like a week later, we had remnants of Sergio, Hurricane Sergio, which recurved in. And then a week later than that, we had another event.
We lucked out, I think, for October with bringing the rainfall total up.
Yeah. And in fact, there was more rain in October than any of the monsoon months.
All right. Zach, we've got a caller. If you would slip your headset on there. Zach, this is Jeff calling us at 790-2040. Go ahead, Zach. I mean, Jeff. You're with Zach.
Yes. Good afternoon. My question is, if we assume that there is climate change and it is caused by carbon dioxide, I'm curious, why would it not be caused by the fact that around the year 1900, the turn of the century, there were 1 billion people on Earth, and right now there are approximately 7.5 billion people on Earth, all breathing in and breathing out, and every time they breathe out, they breathe out a significant amount of carbon dioxide, and all the tractors and all the ships that are, have to bring all the stuff to all those 7.5 billion people. Why isn't the general population of the Earth listed as a possible cause of carbon dioxide emissions? Isn't it possible? Isn't it logical?
Well, I think that the in the tally of in what's causing the human portion of climate change, this greenhouse gas emissions, in the tally of those greenhouse gas emissions is wrapped up this notion of population, because if you have more people, you're going to have more transportation, you're going to have more electricity generation, you know. And if you look at the industries and the budget of greenhouse gas emissions by industry in the U.S., you know, 30% of it is from transportation. So more people, more cars, more industry, more trucking,
more airlines, flights.
You know, electricity generation is the other major piece of the pie. So, and in terms of breathing, I think when you add up like the exhaust that's coming out of tailpipes, the emissions that are generated from power generation, it's just such a small percentage of what's actually coming out of those other sources, and it just gets swamped. But You are right in to say that to sustain the amount of people, you know, it takes energy, and more people you have, more energy. And I think one of the concerns going forward is, you know, the global population. I mean, the U.S. and some other developed countries are major emitters because we have a quality of life that is much higher. And, you know, a major concern is, you know, when China, when India, when, you know, other very populated countries reach higher standards of living, what will the emissions look like then? But at the same time, you know, it's unethical to sort of stop their development because that was never the case for us. So you have to think about these problems with an equity lens as well, and sort of you know, we want to try to develop and increase welfare and reduce our carbon footprint while also propping up people's livelihoods.
Let's go to Lauren. Lauren, quickly, if you would, give us your comment or question.
Very quickly, not to be a party pooper, but from what I remember in school, college and whatnot, I believe that phytobacteria, blue-green algae, will be responsible for infinitely more gas exchange than humans could ever hope to.
All right. I wouldn't have a clue on how to respond to that. Zach, can you give Lauren some kind of a comment?
I guess the only thing that I would say is like everything that I've read, all the papers, all of the reports, that's not part of the major equation, and they're being produced by the foremost experts in that field. So, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not discounting it. I'm not discounting that it's a contribution, but I don't have much insight to speak on that.
All right, El Nino, is El Nino back, or what is the outlook for the winter?
El Nino. I say that I have a love-hate relationship with El Nino, as most climatologists do. Mm-hmm. The current thinking is it's going to be a weak event.
Okay.
And that basically means that when we have an El Nino here, there's a greater chance for wet conditions than if we didn't have an El Nino, but it's by no means a slam dunk. So if you look at the data, we've had years in which there's been below average rainfall in southern Arizona, and we've had years in which there's been above average. But relative to other conditions, like a neutral condition or a La Nina condition, there tends to be more winters with wetter conditions. Being a weak event, maybe we'd back off on that just a little bit. If it was a moderate or strong, we'd be a little bit more more confident in what we're saying. There's still some uncertainty. If you look at the tropical Pacific Ocean where these El Niños sort of originate, it's usually a dance between the sea temperatures and the atmosphere. And what has to happen for it to matter for us is that the temperatures and the ocean have to be responding to each other, because it's the atmosphere that we see, right, through these what's called these teleconnections that influence the position of the jet stream and bring storms into the area. And we're not yet seeing the coupling of the atmosphere to the sea surface temperatures. People expect that to happen, but in the past it's not coupled completely, and therefore we wouldn't expect to have, we wouldn't have much ability to predict. So if I were to hedge, I'd say the odds are slightly in favor of
a wetter,
but
not substantially by much.
Well, we won't be able to tell how much.
Mm-hmm.
We could just say we're more likely to be above average, but I wouldn't feel comfortable saying, you know, 120% versus 150%.
Right.
But you know, it helps a little bit.
All right, Zach Guido, it's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit with us in the first quarter of the year, and I didn't get to half the stuff that I wanted to, including some great research going on about clues to when did the monsoon really, did it come out of the ice age? But we'll save that for another time. What do you say, Zach?
All right, I look forward to that.
Have a great holiday season, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
All
Thank
right,
you.
We'll be right back. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org, and remember to always start with trust.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies, as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I like that new bump music from the group America, one of my favorite groups. They did 9 albums, and the Silent Letter was their last album in 1979. Not a real popular one, but if you're looking for great music from America, check out Silent Letter. What a great CD and album that is. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by our friends at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. So much is going on over there. Of course, they have several, 25,000 poinsettias that are going out all over town. People put their orders in, all sorts of holiday events. They'll be chances are, very good chance, that when you're at a holiday event and you see all these poinsettias, they came from Green Things. So for your poinsettias, I would suggest going to Green Things and picking out whatever color. They've got them all. Maybe a good starting place, greenthingsaz.com on the web. And of course, when you're at Green Things on their 13-acre site, you're going to find not only your gardening supplies, but Zocalo Village, 5 shops there with all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. With us on the live line, District 3, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat Sharon Bronson. Supervisor Bronson, how are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was terrific. I hope yours was.
Very nice. How are your cats?
They are liking the colder days, and they're snuggling in. How about yours?
Actually, there are three, and we've got a picture up on Facebook. The 3-year anniversary of the adoption of our special needs Pierre and Prissy the Glam Cat was yesterday at Pima Animal Care. And man, those cats had all sorts of problems when we brought them in, brought them home. They are special needs, and they're doing so much better. But they really don't like cold weather, so we keep the heat kind of cranked up in their area. But I'm looking forward to Sunday, the open house.
Oh, the party.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it. It will be out at Pima Animal Care Center, and I'm looking forward to taking the tour with my wife, Ann, and see what the taxpayers' money has bought in the way of one of the finest, from what I understand, animal welfare facilities in the United States.
Yeah, I think if you look at our veterinarian space and the equipment they have, it is pretty spectacular. And, you know, this starts at 11. It goes till 4 p.m. on Sunday, but there's going to be all kinds of activities. You're going to have a petting zoo with packed puppies and kittens and farm animals from local rescues, glitter tattoos. You can support your favorite animal design with a little added sparkle. And again, treats for packed pets and the toy shop. So we'd love to see everybody out there. And you can come to our petting zoo, and hopefully by petting our packed puppies and kittens, some of them will find their forever home.
I hope so. Former Congressman Ed Pastor, Arizona's first Hispanic member of Congress, dead at the age of 75, died of a heart attack last night. Did you know Congressman Pastor very well, Sharon Bronson?
I certainly did. He was a friend to Pima County. I first met him when he was on the Board of Supervisors in Maricopa County, and he was one of the primary sponsors and founders of the County Supervisors Association in Arizona. And while we worked, while we in Pima County worked with him, he sat on the Appropriations Committee, and he was really a supporter of our environmental programs, brought us some funds to make them happen. And I think the other thing, he was also, and because of my district, I have many of the Native American nations, tribes in the district. He was an enormous advocate for them. But I guess what I remember him most for was his just commitment to immigration reform and education reform. Those were his passions. I mean, he served as chair of the Hispanic Caucus, but he was always a supporter of the DREAM Act. Clearly, we missed him when he did not run again, but he's going to be missed by everybody for all the things that he did, and our condolences to his family. And he just had such a stellar congressional career.
Yeah, he's
he
got...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say he left behind a wife, two daughters, Yvonne and Laura. Laura is a Phoenix City Council member, and he has also had four grandchildren. Matt called us at 790-2040. Matt, go ahead. You're with Sharon Bronson.
Yeah, you know, Sharon, I don't know if you remember, but I worked on his campaign when he first ran here in Pima County. I used to open the office. I was a young college student. Just finishing up at the U of A, and they entrusted me with the keys to open the office over at the old it used to be a car lot for used cars, and we ran the office from there. And I'd show up every morning, and the number of people that came in asking about Ed was unbelievable, and people like Dan Ekstrom was his main person to give him advice about what Pima County, you know, was about. And he had Ramon Valadez, somebody I think you're familiar with, as his campaign manager here in Southern Arizona, who basically ran the campaign here in Pima County. And it was a very exciting, you know, time, because it was a special election to replace Mo Udall, and I think everybody was pretty confident that whoever won that primary was going to be the next congressman from that district, given the way it was. And it was a tough race because we were, you know, it was against Tom Volge, who was a very well-established politician at the time.
Yep.
And Ed never forgot Southern Arizona. I think Sharon can attest to the fact that he was the type of person who quietly worked in Congress. And even though that district changed and technically was no longer part of his responsibility, Ed was the go-to person here in Arizona for everybody when it came to seeking help on getting money back for Arizona, especially Southern Arizona.
Okay. Thank you, Matt, for your remembrance. Go ahead, Sharon.
No, I agree with Matt, and I think that the other thing that – Ed was the first Hispanic elected to Congress from Arizona, and he was definitely an advocate for that community. And Ed was pretty special. And one of my favorite memories of Ed is he and I shared Ajo, Arizona together. That was part of his district at the beginning, and we would go to the 4th of July parades in Ajo, and he would always be there with his wife, and we had a great time. We would ride together in the convertible, and so he was there for everybody. He he was not one to hide behind a desk. He was out there meeting the public and helping the helping his constituents.
Steve called us at 790-2040. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Yes, hello. Hi, Supervisor Bronson. I have a comment and a question about a topic in the news, and that is Narcan. It was reported in the Star a few weeks ago that four potential overdose victims were saved by Tucson Police Department officers because they were carrying Narcan with them in their vehicles. And in the same article, Sheriff Napier was quoted as saying, "At present, we simply do not believe routine deployment is feasible," which echoed some comments several months earlier that that Chief Gwaldney had made, where he said there are so few instances where deputies are on the scene at an opioid-related issue, and fire and medical are not there within seconds anyway. Well, so few, or few instances, or whatever, but lives are being saved, even if there are few. So I wonder why the Sheriff's Department of Pima County is so reluctant to carry Narcan in their vehicles. And it leads me to a broader question, though, that I wanted to ask you. How can you and the Board of Supervisors in general influence Sheriff's Department policies in this and in other areas, considering that that they're not under your direct jurisdiction?
Thank you for your comment there, Steve. Go ahead, Supervisor.
Well, I guess just to the immediate point about Narcan, I would hope that the sheriff would reconsider. I know that the majority of counties in Pima County, the deputies carry it. I think it's just Greenlee, Apache, Pinal, and Pima that don't, and I think several of them may now be doing it. But we do know from experiences of rural southern Arizona counties that carry it, they think it's effective, it doesn't degrade that much with the heat, and it's safe. And I think you can speak to supervisors and sheriffs and Graham, Cochise, and Santa Cruz to see, and they will talk about the efficacy of it. But I and to the point, can we tell the sheriff what to do? No, we can't, but we can advocate. And I'm hopeful that they will, or that he will reconsider this situation and have them start carrying Narcan. TPD does it. I'm a little perplexed as to why we can't, because it's not going to cost us anything.
Sharon Bronson will stick around for another segment. Kristen, I know you're on hold, but we are a bit over. I need to take a break here, and I need not only need to, but I want to, because I want to tell people about Mona's Danish Bakery, Northeast Corner, Swan, and Sunrise. Steve and the team get up so early to make sure the bread you're eating right now when you go by for lunch came out of the oven just a few hours ago. And my favorite, the rustic bread that they do. It's so good. Anyway, Christmas is coming. They are the home of the Danish Kringle, and be a great way to start Christmas morning with a Danish Kringle. Go by and check it out. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their direct website. There's also a link on my website, BuckmasterShow.com. We'll be right back with Sharon Bronson. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. It's Buckmaster on KVOI AM 1030 in Tucson. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's just a three-hour drive from Tucson. So much going on over in historic Silver City, including the world-class collection of Mimbres pottery, now again on view at the museum. They have a really nice little museum over at Western New Mexico University. It's a really nice campus there in Silver City. Again, only a three-hour drive. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. There is a listing of great places to stay and really great recreation opportunities. Sharon Bronson, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat District 3, with us on the live line. I have so much to talk about in so little time, but Kristen, you have been waiting very patiently, wants to again address Narcan and what citizens can do about getting it into sheriff's vehicles. Is that basically your question, Kristen?
Thank you, Bill, and hello, Supervisor Bronson. My friend tried to commit suicide a few weeks ago using an opioid, and he does have a second chance to now reevaluate living, and so this has become something really personal to me. And I know the previous caller already asked what the supervisors can do to try to convince Sheriff Napier to perhaps carry Narcan, but what can we do as constituents? Is there some way, you know, can we meet with somebody, or what can we do? This is, I think, really important.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. I think what you can do, and the sheriff occasionally has coffee with cops. I think you could attend one of those coffees and advocate. I share your concerns because my district has many rural areas like Arivaca, Ajo, Amado, Picture Rocks, Aver Valley, to name a few. And I'm not sure we can get ambulances there in time or medics there in time in those rural areas, which is why I think it's so important that the sheriff reevaluate. I know as one of his concerns was that it degrades in the heat. I think that if he'd done a little more research, he would say he would see that's not accurate. So I think your best the world is run by those who show up. You need to show up and ask the sheriff respectfully to reconsider his position.
All right. Good advice. What are we going to do about the road situation? Prop 403, the folks overwhelmingly turned it down. So what's next, Sharon Bronson?
Yes, they did turn down Prop 463. I think our focus this year at the county through our legislative agenda will be on supporting legislation to provide the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority, another half-cent sales tax option. And then we would hope that the RTA would develop an appropriation plan for it for voter consideration, and that the additional tax would only become effective, again, if approved by the voters of Pima County. So I think that that's we've exhausted our local options, so I think this is an option we have to pursue with our state legislators. And hopefully we will get that. We will be able to get that legislation that will enable the RTA to develop an appropriate plan and then put another half-cent sales tax option on the table. But the reality is we are dealing with transportation funding mechanisms that were developed in the 20th century that don't work for the 21st century. So we need to, on one hand, get the half-cent sales tax authorization, but on the other hand, we need to rethink at a local, national, regional level how we fund transportation. The way we did it in the past doesn't work for the 21st century.
What else is on that agenda? Quickly, the legislative agenda and session will be starting, hard to believe, in about 6 weeks.
Two other things. We're focusing on criminal justice reform and expanding those efforts with an analytical process. We want to ensure that the biggest part of our budget is for justice and law enforcement. That's what the taxpayers, their property tax dollars are going for. We want to make sure that these are being used effectively and that justice is being delivered. So we will be working on ways to keep low-level offenders out of the jail on minor drug possessions while at the same time making sure we are focusing on public safety. And I think the other issue we're going to be looking, well, two other issues, water policy, because this is obviously becoming an issue as our lake mead declines, and we've got to focus on how we get through the 21st century with the waters that we need and how we protect our environment while we're doing that. And then I think another issue is we've formed a Border Counties Coalition, an Arizona Border Counties Coalition, and we need to look at various factors related to immigration, related to trade, that improve our ability to grow our economy.
Also, just to follow up, because there's a lot of interest as evidence here on the show today about Narcan, can folks show up at the next Pima County supervisor meeting and make their feelings known there as well? That was a question from someone. And when would the next meeting be, Sharon, please?
The next meeting is this coming Tuesday, the 4th of December, and we do have a call to the public. They are welcome to come there. But again, I would urge people to see if Sheriff Napier is willing to do coffee with cops and engage the community in this dialogue.
And Bob Dio, my fine engineer producer, Bob, you were saying to me that this has been important in your life as well. Is that right? You want to jump in there real quick, Bob?
You know, it's important because with small children or medium-sized children in the house, you drop a pill, a child ends up with it. Even, I know you love cats. If a dog happened to get it, that's it for the animal if you've got any, you know, long-lasting. So it's just like having a fire extinguisher in your house.
Wow. All right, there you go, Sharon. So
and
a lot
that's
of
a, that's a great comment.
Yeah.
I like that analogy. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously this is an issue that people really want to talk about, and the sheriff, I know he listens to the program, and the public really wants to be heard on this. Anyway, Sharon Bronson, have a great holiday season. We'll talk with you again very soon, and hopefully see you Sunday at the Pima Animal Care Center dedication or a ceremony, whatever, an opportunity.
Party with the pets. Party with the pets.
Party with the pets. Okay. Supervisor Bronson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. That's going to do it for Buckmaster. On behalf of Bob Dio, I am Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.